Hello, and welcome to Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast, the premier and flagship podcast of LRM Online. I'm your host, Brandon Jones, and this week I had an opportunity to sit down with Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead. These are the two gentlemen that directed the Anthony Mackie and Jamie Dornan star Synchronic. So it's a high-concept time travel film, and they spilled the dirt on all of their secrets with regard to this film, as well as told me what projects they'd like to work on next. So sit back, relax, and I will be back with you after the break.
Watching this, I'm probably trying to convince you of something pretty unbelievable, or I'm dead.
I'd do anything to get her back, but this is, the next dose could kill you.
There are things that are far worse than death.
What happened to him?
They're not returning.
It's gotta be me.
You can't deal with reality.
Yeah, because you're a fucking
The clock keeps ticking down.
The time is an illusion.
Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Good, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, thank you for asking. So, I'm here with Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, the directors of Synchronic. So it's afternoon where you guys are, right?
It just became after.
Okay. So I'm sorry, I'm in Germany, so my ability to figure out where people are, I struggle with it sometimes. So thank you for joining me on Breaking Geek Radio. I'm really excited to talk to you guys. This was a fun movie to watch. I got a chance to review it recently. It was funny, I was covering TIFF 2020, and I saw that this film was at TIFF 2019. I was like, how the hell did I not get to see that this even existed? So the question I wanted to ask you guys, so again, this was a TIFF 2019. It's about to get a theatrical release tomorrow, right? October 23rd. How you guys feel about it? Are you excited? Are you finally for this to just be out, people experience it and see it more than just geeks like me?
Yeah, I mean, well, we've been we've been building up to this release day, we've been shooting another small movie, and this is our first time making another project while we're releasing one. And it's really interesting because, usually you're kind of in a very, very unhealthy way, obsessively tracking how everyone's responding to your movie. And now we just don't have time to. And it's been a very interesting experience. I mean, literally, when this interview is done, we're gonna go put up a camera, and start shooting again.
Get back to work. Okay.
Yeah.
We're currently in costume, and that's why his hair is blue. That's why I look like Walter White. So
I just figured you guys were hanging out. You just had lunch or something like that. I wasn't gonna ask. Okay.
No, we're quarantining together to make a movie. Yeah.
Well, that's very cool. One of the questions I wanted to ask you guys about this movie, so it's a time travel film. Part of it takes place in what I think of the 1950s. Is that accurate?
30s.
30s. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What kind of struck me about it was you don't really, let's see, you kind of take the brakes off. And one of the things that you confront is race and time travel. And it's just this idea that, if someone, they look like me, time travel is problematic, right? And so I thought that was a very interesting thing that you guys did. Was that intentional? Can you talk about that at all?
Yeah. The idea kind of planted itself around 2012 or 13, where we were at a film festival with our first film Resolution, and it was early morning. We were at a bagel shop, eating off probably a hangover, and. On TV, we were just going to grab a bagel and leave, but on TV, there was Back to the Future. And Back to the Future is a great movie. We like to say every scene of that movie is the best scene of the movie, But we're watching, we realize, as Marty McFly takes the stage and starts jamming, we realize, this only works because he looks like Marty McFly. And we start joking around about that. about the fact that it's like, oh, yeah, the 50s look really awesome. We like to romanticize the 50s or even Victorian era where it's like, oh, you just dress up really nice and you look cool and you pose and you speak very cleanly, you know.
Really, like you died
most,
smallpox.
Yeah, most people were just dirty. Most people hadn't had a bath in like a year or ever. You know, they're like, I'll go down to the stream and tap myself with some cold water, you know. And we realized like pre-antibiotics, it sucks for everybody all the time. And it, you know, even just going back like 30 years, like, I mean, really you can look at the past through rose-colored glasses, through rose-tinted glasses. Or you can actually realize that we romanticize the past because that's a drug. But the reality is, it was actually not that, it wasn't that great for most people and probably wasn't that much better for anybody. And so as horror filmmakers, we start to look at it through this lens of like, well, that's our antagonist. There's not a time-traveling serial killer. Time itself is the problem. That was why we started approaching it that way, in a way that would be, you know, potentially a little bit more honest.
The thing we talked about constantly in the development of the film is that literally just saying, like, for most people, the past was a monster. So that's the monster of our movie. But we were also constantly acknowledged that we have a long way to go as human beings right now.
He has a lot of problems in the present too.
But at least also when you look at cinema and you think of like the idea of a period piece, probably most people what pops up in your head is this arguably dishonest version of the past.
Okay. So you talked about kind of nostalgia as a drug. And one of my next questions was going to be, I really like the concept of the pill as a time travel device. So you've talked about Back to the Future, very cool car, right? Everybody loves the DeLorean. How did you guys arrive at the pill as being the thing that was going to bend time?
That was Justin. When we were originally talking about this idea of, you know, that the past, present, and future are actually just an illusion and they all exist simultaneously. We can only access it in a linear way.
Yeah.
We were thinking about, you know, how exactly could one access that? And I didn't know anything about designer synthetic drugs. I did not know you could literally go to a head shop and buy drugs legally. And so he was just like, you know, have this thing that you could just totally do? And it's funny because for us, that's even more real world frightening than the idea of taking, say, you know, I don't know, DMT and having a trip, because these are molecules that are being deliberately changed by the pharmacologist. They are very deliberately being changed from what it's supposed to be to something completely new so that it's not technically illegal.
But it's not research.
But it's at all. But it has no research except maybe one of their buddies took it because there's no,
yeah,
you know, there's no scientific process behind it. And that's not to say they are dangerous. It's just that we don't know. We don't know anything about them. And that's terrifying. The unknown is so terrifying when it comes to a drug that's been deliberately changed to not be any drug you ever actually know.
And then also with like narratively and tone wise and all these things in terms of like trying to keep the movie feeling like something that could have happened in some corner of the world or the country, you just didn't hear about it.
Yeah.
Well, if it was a big pharmaceutical company, you would have heard about it. And if it were a popular street drug, you would have heard about it. But if it were one of these designer synthetic analogs that hits head shops for 2 weeks and then disappears, it just may have been a batch and it happened and you never heard about it. Now, all that said, it's not meant to be an activist movie in any way about drug use. And it is not saying that, like, it's very much a pulpy science fiction idea.
Okay.
Not meant to be dangerous.
All right. Yeah. Heard it here first. Don't do drugs, right? That's you guys, right? That's the movie. One of the things that you said, the analogy that you brought up, you talked about time being something we can access. One of the analogies that I loved about this movie, and I think Aaron, you talked about it, but the analogy that they used in the movie was, or that you guys used in the movie, was a record, right? And that, how was it? It was that songs are all on the record and the drug is the needle, right? I really love that concept, and I was wondering if you could talk about, like, where did that come from?
Yeah, that exact one was not in the scene, and we were developing it, and we thought, okay, right now, this scene has a lot of basically saying what's going on, right? The science behind what's going on. Not all of it, but that's what one would call an exposition scene. You try to find ways to spread that information out because it must be known to comprehend the movie. Mm-hmm. And you spread it out amongst the rest of the movie. But that scene still has a bit of a concentration of it. And I realized that we needed some form of a visual to send this home. And we're like, okay, well, what's in his apartment that we can actually use? There's an even better visual we discovered later, but isn't in the movie, which is time is viewed as a flowing river. You're born in a flowing river, mm-hmm. going forward indefinitely. But actually, it's a frozen river that we just happen to move along at a certain pace. But if you can conceptualize, you could walk backwards up that frozen river.
Right.
You could walk forwards. You could stay still. But the record was something we thought we would have in his apartment and was a really good, simple, clean visual.
I just realized something. There's a part of this I just realized is first off, thank you for saying that's a good visual representation, but it actually makes me respect, if I could, it makes me respect Damon Lindelof's The Watchmen and Alan Moore's original book, The Watchmen, even more, because the way they demonstrate this exact same idea is through narrative structure.
Yeah.
By shuffling the scene in such a way and having the character say, the reason why you're seeing the scene this way is because I don't see it sequentially. I don't see it linearly. So I'm gonna show you how I... So getting it structurally from Dr. Manhattan's perception, the way he sees time, that's so beautiful. But thank you for the record compliment, even though we're like kind of third tier on expressing Block's time travel.
Yeah.
I think it works. So I will tell you that one of my favorite, I'm a sucker for like time travel. And so time travel conceits and concepts. And when you can try to couch it in something like an idea, especially so... the way that you all expressed that idea was unique to me. I had never seen or heard that before. So I was like, that's very cool. That's very clever. I really like that. One of the other things that struck me as being unique about this film was the way Anthony Mackie transported through time. So in other movies, like if you're in a car, you flash to the other point. If you're not in a car, you just jump and you're there. Here was kind of like this bleeding away of the present day to end the past would kind of invade your space. Can you talk about that conceptually?
Yeah, that was actually one of the very first concepts because that for us is the horror of the movie, is this idea that you're sitting there and it's not glowing, it's not magic. It hopefully doesn't feel like a crazy visual effect. It's more just something very subtle and very quiet, where you just, you know, you're in this room and I look over and there's a boulder and then I look over and to the right there's a waterfall. I look down and I'm standing in water and I look up and the apartment's gone and it's all quiet and it happens without blinking. If we had, you know, $60 million more dollars, all of the time travel sequences would have transitioned just like that and been seven real time minutes, you know?
Yeah.
That would have been the jam, but would have required an Avengers size budget. But that to us is the horror, is that it's something that's almost like a magic trick happening right in front of you that you can't control, rather than a wild thrill ride.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. I thought.
Oh no. No.
Okay.
I've never seen there's a bottle opener under Aaron's sandal.
I've tried many different sandals. I've tried on many different sandals, and I always keep throwing away my new ones because the old ones, they're just so comfortable. But yeah, they got these stupid frat boy bottle openers on the bottom.
That's because you broke them in. You got to give some other ones a chance. You got to like give them Okay.
Yeah.
It's hard because I want to talk to you guys more in depth about the movie, but I don't want to spoil it for other people because you guys talked about Back to the Future and I'm curious without spoiling it, were the conversations that Anthony Mackie was having with his dog. His dog's name was Hawking, right? Am I remembering that correctly? Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that an homage to Back to the Future as it's supposed to be, or is that just accidentally?
Right. Well, okay. So in Back to the Future, the dog's Einstein.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And then he named his dog after. I think that is that's a coincidence, right? I mean, yeah, but also it's
like, no way. Is it really?
I here's the thing. There are there are things without believing that there's a lot going on in my brain that influenced me not knowing it. That's mm-hmm. one where it's like, my brain probably just, I saw that movie as a small child.
It's just part of your DNA.
Yeah. What I remember is that it was just that, because he had a mouse at some point, one version of the script as well, named Tyson or something, you know? And he's just like this, as he says, he's like an armchair physicist. So he just names animals after physicists, you know?
Okay.
Because I didn't remember it was named Einstein until like we were in production or something. I forgot the dog's name.
All right. So, and the reason why I asked was this. So in Back to the Future, you've got Einstein, you've got the car, he's video recording it, he's doing these experiments. And in this, like, it seemed like not a one for one, but like, here's our version of that, where he's doing these scientific experiments and imposing his theories about this is how time travel works. And this is very fun, but it was a very fun scene. As homages go, it was one that did the thing where it evoked the memory of the older thing, but brought it to a new place. So it's definitely fun. One of the questions that I had for you guys was about the cast. Like, so you had a really good cast for this. Jamie Dornan and Anthony Mackie had really, really good chemistry. And I'm going to say this as a criticism. I felt that Ali Oneida, I'm going to say her name wrong.
I'm just going to say Ali. Ioannidis. Yeah.
Ioannidis, thank you. Into the Badlands was phenomenal, and she was phenomenal in it. So when I saw that, she was like, oh, it's going to be awesome. And it hurt my heart to say that she wasn't in this movie enough. But at least for Anthony Mackie and Jamie Dornan, they had really good chemistry. And so how did you guys do that? How did you bring that out of them?
It's interesting. Usually when we make movies, we've got, you know, so much time to workshop them with the performers, and just do tons of rehearsal and make discoveries, and sort of tailor the script to them. But something we learned about working with bigger celebrity names is that they are extremely busy people, and there's not a world where you can really, at least we can't do that. I bet much bigger directors, I bet they can. But we don't get to do that. And as a testament and a credit, they're such good actors that they can just like, you get them there and they have it. They've got it. They've got the chemistry. They've got this old lived in friendship and it's just there.
Yeah. It seems like they just do the work before they ever roll up with us. And also, by the way, they are friends, you know, I mean, they get along and we had many dinners together. And it was wonderful. So.
Okay. So Aaron, one of the things you said was about, you know, if we had $60 million more dollars that, you know, it would look this way or that kind of way. What kind of movie would you want to do if you did have just a huge, ginormous budget? What's your thing? What's your white whale?
It's funny though. That's a really good question, but I'll also say with obviously plenty of practical exceptions, but for the most part, we don't feel held back by our budgets. The Endless is a great example where it's like, if you give us a few more million dollars, it would have been the same movie and we'd be a lot richer, you know. But for us, I guess the easier way to do it would be to name like adaptations we'd want to do, to say like what type of movie, you know. We'd love to take a swing at The Dark Tower, the Stephen King show.
Really?
They already did it wonderfully, but Preacher, the TV show, but mm-hmm. is originally a comic book or a graphic novel.
Right.
And, swing. And this is like the kind of book, you know. And I guess their white whale, but it's also everyone in the world's white whale, including the authors, is House of Leaves. Love to do House of Leaves someday. You know,
okay.
It's just an incredible, incredible piece of narrative work. So
So now I'm gonna have to look, because everything else you've said, so I've read The Dark Tower, and so when you said House of Leaves, that's the one that I watched Preacher. I read Dark Tower, and honestly, that's not a bad one for you guys, given your visual style and kind of like I always imagine that world is slightly dirty and gritty. And so what you all filmed, particularly in the beginning of this film, it definitely struck me as that world. So that'd be really cool.
Hey, Brandon, so sorry to jump in here. We have time for one more question.
One more question. Okay. So one more question. That's a lot of pressure. So you talked about Dark Tower as a television show. This film and the concept seemed like it would be a good one for a longer format. Have you guys thought about that at all, making like this concept? Because it seems very like Stargate, very, very like, you know, 7 days, if anybody ever saw that show.
I'm gonna potentially give you like the least satisfying answer ever.
Not to my last question, you can't do that.
But to be honest, we've had long discussions about doing a TV show related to Synchronic, but it wasn't about exploring the time travel aspect more. It was about really diving into the world of designer synthetic analog drugs. Like, who are the people that make them? Where are they made? How do they make the packaging? How do they distribute it? What is their own little homegrown testing process like? What is that world, the competitive aspect of it, the dangers of it, the dangers of the other people you're competing with? And that there's something really intriguing about that. But then off in some unknown realm, we don't get to see any more stories about this really fascinating time travel.
Right. Or cool somewhere. Characters. Yeah. We would love to make weird sci-fi Breaking Bad that way. that's more where it would go than Quantum Leap.
Okay, so listen, that as a final answer, that's actually not bad. Sci-fi Breaking Bad, you can't go wrong with that. I like it.
Going back, that was really not satisfying. I'm gonna try to hit it in this one. Let's see if I can hit it. See if I can.
Okay, I'm ready.
A last question. We're going through adaptations. I just realized one that I think that would be rad for us, because I was thinking, I was like, how much of an honor would it be to adapt something by Alan Moore? Mm-hmm. But so much of his the main works are like, oh, they've been done, and you wouldn't want to touch Watchmen for a very long time.
It's sure.
Even Vendetta is a very good film. And this is not a criticism of From Hell that exists, but I think there's a version of From Hell that hasn't been realized yet, and it's probably like a 6 to 10 episode series that would be bonkers.
It'd be crazy. It would be in black and white, all handheld.
Yes, and go into the nitty gritty of like the weirdest. Yes.
Either let us do it or let Steven Soderbergh do it.
Yes.
Like the Nick.
Yes.
Oh, that would be so dope. That's such a good idea.
Okay.
All right. Are we with, or was that a good?
No, I think that's good. I like Alan Moore's work, even though he seems to hate everything that somebody else does of his stuff, but I would love
fine.
To see
he's
you guys take a crack at it.
He's totally on it. Yeah. He's using hating everyone that tries to mess with his things.
Well, thank you both. I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me on the show.
Thanks. Thank you for talking.
Appreciate it so much.
And I think we can leave it there. So, Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead's new film, Synchronic, can be found in limited theatrical release starting today, Friday, October 23rd. So, go ahead and check it out. And if you do, let us know in the comments below what you think. I am highly curious as to what you all thought of the film. But other than that, next week, the usual Breaking Geek crew will be back, so stay tuned for that. For all your entertainment needs and podcasting needs, be sure to check out LRM Online. We've got some great content over there for you. And as for me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at SirJonesius, and of course, right here on Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast. Folks, as always, it's been a great time, and we'll catch you on the next one. Hasta lasagna.